Okay, I've got a little warning for you. A couple of episodes ago, I recorded the whole episode in my pants. It's very hot at the moment, very hot, or at least hot for here in the UK. I am also recording this episode in my pants. Now, I thought I should warn you, okay? You should be grateful that I'm actually wearing my pants. That's how hot it is, but I didn't want to get an R rating or an 18 certificate in the UK. So I am in my pants, but try not to think about that, okay? If you can, just forget I even told you. Just forget I even told you. Okay, run the theme music.
What's this? What's this?
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
What's this? What's this?
It's Christmas time.
What's this? What's this?
It's all humbug, I tell you.
What's this? What's this?
Well, just me and my trusty old Red Ryder carbine action 2 on the shot range model air rifle.
What is this?
It's the Total Christmas Podcast with your host, Jack.
He's got the IQ of a rabbit.
Yes, but he's got the faith of a child. Simple.
Hello, you beautiful people, and welcome to the Total Christmas Podcast. Merry Christmas, you glorious people. Now, here's the thing. My theme music, do you remember it used to say, he's an angry elf? Well, I am angry, so it should really say that. But here's the thing. After someone messed around with it last week, I did one of those online IQ tests. Turns out, I have got the IQ of a rabbit. Yeah. So I thought, you know what? Let's call a spade. And we're keeping it like that. Yeah, that's, well, for the time being, until I change it back, I suppose. Maybe I should read a few books, maybe increase my IQ a little bit, and then we can go back to the old theme music. Yeah. So, a little bit of housekeeping. So most of you know that I'm a gardener, and I've got a few commercial contracts that I do, and I was at one today, they had a big skip, right? And I was just about to chuck a bag load of cuttings in there, and I found a snow globe, right? It's plastic, but the snow globe, it's actually quite big. It stands about, I'd say what, maybe 7 inches, 8 inches tall. The globe itself is a good 6 inches across, and it's got a little red truck inside, and on top of the truck is a Christmas tree, and then you press the button, and it sends like a jet of air around, and it spins the snow, right? So you don't shake it, it's not got water in it. It's like one of these where it looks like it's made of polystyrene, the snow, and it all just spins around. It looks really lovely, and it plays tunes and it lights up. So I'm gonna play a bit for you. Here it comes. But it doesn't just play one song. Have a listen to this. And this one. It plays about 6 different songs and it's in perfect condition. I didn't even have to put new batteries in it. There I was, pulling it out of the skip. I'm like, who would throw away a magnificent objet d'art, that's a piece of artwork, who would throw away a magnificent piece of objet d'art like this? A fool, I tell you, a fool. Well, it's mine now, anyway, and I love it. Well, I like it. It's all right. Bit tacky. But it's mine, and that's what's important. Right, there was one other thing. So do you remember in the last episode when I was doing the version of A Christmas Carol? It was the stingiest man in town from, like, 56, I think. And I said what was cool was that one of the Cratchit's children was called Belinda, and I really liked it because in Muppet's Christmas Carol, one of the little Cratchit piggies was called Belinda as well. And I thought that they got that from The Stingiest Man in Town. Turns out, they got it from the book. Yeah, both of them got it from the book. I did not know that. I knew we knew Peter. I knew we knew Martha. Of course, we knew Tiny Tim. I thought those were the only ones they named, but they also mentioned Belinda as well. I made a bit of a fool of myself. Luckily, no one called me on it, but I thought, you know, I should bring attention to that because I'm an honest man. Anyway, that's the housekeeping. Let's start the show. So, boys and girls, I don't know if you remember, but a while ago I talked about the Devil's Knell, which is a bell in a town in Yorkshire, where they ring it on Christmas Eve once for every year since the birth of Jesus. I'm not going to go into the whole story of that. It was incredibly interesting, if I say so myself. If you want to check it out, it's a couple of episodes ago. I'll say a couple, could be like 10, I don't know. Anyway, that was about a place in Yorkshire. And Yorkshire is a county up north in the UK. It's actually broken up into four parts, north, east, south and west. But Yorkshire is a huge county. If you count all four together, it's the biggest county in the UK. And I thought, do you know what? I bet they've got loads of other traditions there that I should look up. So I did look it up and I found a fantastic one, and it's called the Yorkshire Christmas Pie. Now, I'm sure you're all familiar with the turducken, which is turkey, and inside that is duck, and inside that is chicken. There's your turducky. That's called a portmanteau, where the three words are squeezed together into one. And it's a multiple bird roast. Multiple bird roasts date all the way back to Roman times. So you get your bird, debone it, then you get another bird and debone that, and then wrap it around the first bird, and then you get a bigger bird, debone, wrap it, and it just keeps going bigger and bigger and bigger. You could make a massive one. You could do it until you run out of birds, which would be very tricky, actually, because I suppose when you start getting like, to the outer layers, it's not going to wrap all the way around, is it? It's going to be sort of like the last one would just be like sat on top like a hat. I don't know. I've never tried making one. I've never even seen one. I've heard of a turducken. I've never seen it. Anyway, they weren't just popular in Rome. They're popular all over Europe. I guess maybe all around the world. I don't know. But even Henry VII was a fan. But in Yorkshire, what they did was they took the multiple bird roast and put it in a pie. Yeah, put it in a pie. Because in Yorkshire, they were very famous for their pies. And in the 1700s, this actually became quite a tradition. Now, the pie has a very thick crust. It's what's known as a standing crust. And a standing crust, it's called a standing crust because once you've cooked the pie and you take it out of its pan or its dish, it can stand on its own, because a lot of pies, they might just collapse under the weight of the contents. Whereas this one has a very thick crust so they can stand up on its own. And often in the old days, these thick crusts were elaborately decorated with pictures from the season, holly leaves and stuff like that on it. Now, one of the reasons the crust needed to be so thick is not only because the contents were so large, but also they'd be shipped all around the country. So they put it in a box and send it all the way to London. It's a long way from Yorkshire to London. So the crust would be up to an inch thick to keep it safe on its journey all the way down there. Yeah, an inch thick of crust. And to be honest, the way they make the crust, it would be very hard, like almost rock hard. So it wasn't really for eating. It was more just for keeping the contents safe. Now, although they were made in Yorkshire, they weren't just popular in Yorkshire. They actually made it overseas. And George Washington notably ate Yorkshire Christmas pie, and he had a correspondence with a man called David Humphreys, who was his former military aide, about Yorkshire pies in the year 1786. That's when he was in the White House, and they sort of exchanged notes about eating Christmas pie. So clearly, for a while, it was a very popular dish. Now, I want to read out a couple of things I read online. Now, the first one is a short article that appeared in the Newcastle Chronicle on the 6th of January, 1770. Okay, now you're going to have to ignore the oldie-worldy way of talking, but it says, Monday last was brought from Howick to Berwick to be shipped for London for Sir Henry Grey, a pie, the contents whereof are as follows. 2 bushels of flour, 20 pounds of butter, 4 geese, 2 turkeys, 2 rabbits, 4 wild ducks, 2 woodcocks, 6 snipes, and 4 partridges, 2 neat's tongues, 2 curlews, 7 blackbirds, and 6 pigeons. It is supposed a very great curiosity was made by Mrs. Dorothy Patterson, housekeeper at Howick. It was near 9 feet in circumference at bottom, weighs about 12 stones, will take 2 men to present it to table. This is the good bit, right? It is neatly fitted with a case and 4 small wheels to facilitate its use to every guest that inclines to partake of its contents at table. There you go. Imagine that. They shipped that all the way to London, this huge 9 feet in circumference pie. It weighs 12 stone. There you go. That's a Christmas pie, I tell you. Now, if you're interested in making your own Yorkshire Christmas pie, I'm going to be reading out a recipe for you. Now, this recipe comes from The Art of Cookery by Hannah Glass. There's an E on the end of that, so it could be Glace, but it's probably not. And in every article I read about the Yorkshire pie, this came up, her recipe. So, are you ready? Okay, I hope you've got your ingredients ready. Here we go. First, make a good standing crust. We discussed that, okay? It's a big, thick crust. Let the wall and bottom be very thick. She doesn't specify how thick, so that's up to you. It could be like an inch thick, or it could be as thick as a bloke who's got an IQ of a rabbit, that sort of thick. Okay, let the wall and bottom be very thick. Bone a turkey, a goose, a fowl, a partridge, and a pigeon. Season them all very well. Take half an ounce of mace, half an ounce of nutmegs. It does say nutmegs, the S on the end. I didn't add the S. That's what it says in the recipe. A quarter of an ounce of cloves. Oh, you've ruined it. I don't like cloves. I'm not eating your pie now. I'm not eating your pie. Now forget it. And half an ounce of black pepper. All beat fine together. Two large spoonfuls of salt and then mix them together. Open the fowls all down the back and bone them. First the pigeon, then the partridge. Cover them. Then the fowls, then the goose, and then the turkey, which must be large. Season them all well first and lay them in the crust, so as it will look only like a whole turkey. Do you get that? So they're wrapped up and it just looks like a turkey. Then have a hare ready cased, don't know what that means, and wiped with a clean cloth. Yeah, a clean cloth, okay? This was the 1700s, so they knew all about hygiene back then. Use a clean cloth, not some dirty dish rag. Cut it to pieces, that is, joint it, season it, and lay it as close as you can on one side. On the other side, woodcocks, more game, and what sort of wild fowl you can get. I don't know what wild fowl you can get, but, you know, get them, whatever, and chuck them in. Season them well and lay them close. Put at least 4 pounds of butter into the pie. Did you get that? 4 pounds of butter into the pie. 4 pounds of butter. Then lay on your lid. And I think that means put on the lid. I don't think it means lay on it, because that's not going to do any favours, is it? Oh, which must be a very thick one as well. And let it be well baked. It must have a very hot oven and a bloody big oven as well. And will bake at least 4 hours. 4 hours? I want it now. I can't wait 4 hours. Forget it. I'm going to McDonald's. This crust will take a bushel of flour. Okay, then. Shouldn't you have told me that at the start? I'm already baking it now. In this chapter, you will see how to make it. These pies are often sent to London in a box as presents. Therefore, the walls must be well built. I'm not sending mine to London, am I? I'm eating it at home. In fact, I'm not even making it. I've already told you. I'm going to McDonald's. I'm having McNuggets and chips. Nice. So there you go. If you want to make your own one, that's how you do it. If you don't want to make your own one, go to McDonald's. Sorted, isn't it? So, sadly, they've sort of fallen out of favour. People do still make multiple bird roasts, but they don't put it in a pie, especially not one with inch-thick walls. But that was a thing in the 1700s, and it did spread, but now it's gone. But I thought I'd share it with you. So that was a tradition. You know, you could bring it back. We could bring it back, couldn't we? No, sounds awful. Inch-thick pastry. No one's eating that. Now let's do this.
Do you hear what I hear?
Do you hear what I hear?
I went to the doctor the other day, and he told me that I needed glasses. So I've gone out and purchased beer, wine, martini, and shot, and I sure hope that's enough. On Christmas Eve in Provence, France, the children dress like milkmaids and shepherds and lead a torchlit parade to midnight mass. They sing the song called Bring a Torch, Jeanette Isabella, from the 17th century. In this song, Jeanette and Isabella are two farmhands who find the baby Jesus and Mary in a stable. It begins with the news of the baby's birth and calls for the girls to fetch light to illuminate the mother and child. As the title suggests, they are asked to bring torches, which immediately set off my "Do you hear what I hear?" alarm bells. For you see, a torch in the UK is the word we use for what is called a flashlight in the U.S. In the States, we still consider a torch to be a handheld flame. It's primitive, commonly seen when camping or in caves or even on the beach, and it's a tool to scare off wild animals. It is simply a stick with fire at the end and used for providing light, like in the song. Now, torches here are popularly used by anti-Semitic Klansmen and Nazis to illuminate their rallies. So why are flashlights called torches by the Brits? The reason for this difference can be traced back to the historic origin of the device. Before there were electric lights, torches were the means often used to provide light. The missing context here is that the very first portable light source was created in America, and it never arrived in England. In 1896, a British immigrant, David Mizell, created the first portable light device while living in America. However, this light would flash instead of providing a consistent beam. The copper portable batteries and the carbon filament bulbs being used at the time were new and they couldn't maintain a constant current. The filaments were inefficient and the batteries had weak storage capacity. Users would have to turn it on and off for seconds at a time to avoid draining the batteries. The light would be shown briefly, just enough time to find an item or to see if the path was clear. The light was essentially provided in flashes. However, this original device was never used in the UK. Only a few years later, Joseph Swan came up with a low voltage bulb in England. The Brits then used the traditional definition for a handheld light source and referred to this device as an electric torch, given its similarity in function with the old-fashioned fire torch. The US did quickly adopt the English low-voltage bulb, but either through apathy or the slowness of communication, the word flashlight had stuck, and it was just commonly used by us colonists. Which brings us back to the two young shepherdesses and their excitement at finding the infant in the stable. It was good for its time, as I would hate to think that instead of torches, we were urging the villagers to put a newborn baby into the glare of a blinking beacon. Cheers and happy Christmas.
That is another really interesting one. Great work there, Bob. I never knew that's what it was called, a flashlight. I just sort of, one of those things you just think, well, you know, you sort of flick it on, it flashes on. I don't know, but now we know. Now we all know. Great work, Bob. He's going to be back again in a bit. Right now, we're doing this. This is the quiz, this is the quiz, this is the quiz, this is the quiz. So, boys and girls, I don't know if you remember, but in the last episode, I was talking about an email I got from Pamela Wootton, and she was whinging about my Santa Banter quiz, which I only did once. It was a one-off, just for a bit of fun. Clearly, she didn't find it fun. Well, Pamela Wootton, I've got news for you. I received an email from Timothy R. Dumont, and he's put, "Hey Jack, I really did enjoy Santa Banter, even if Pamela Wootton..." Actually, he's put Pamela Woodson. So he's even got your name wrong, Pamela. You wouldn't get a point for that, Timothy. "Even if Pamela Woodson didn't. And even if the two words don't rhyme in the US." Yeah, I didn't think of that. Yeah. And he's put, "I really hope we get Santa Banter at least once in a while." So there you go, Pamela. It's a thing, okay? It's happening. I don't know when. It's going to sneak up on you. And you'll be like, "Oh, here's the quiz. Oh no, it's Santa Banter." It's going to happen. Or it might happen. I haven't decided. I also got an email from Benji Pearson. Are you ready for this? Are you ready? This is what he put. "I am amazed to report that in the latest quiz I scored a zero. I'm appalled, shocked and alarmed by this score. I'll hit the books and do better in the future." Goodness gracious. Can I just go back to last episode's quiz and read out question number something? In the song, "The 12 Days of Christmas, what were given on the 8th day?" You must have known that one. Admittedly, I have looked through the rest of the questions and I could understand how someone could get the rest of them wrong. Yeah, a lot of them are sort of UK-based. I do feel slightly guilty about that, but not that guilty. You could have got the 8 Maids of Milking one. Come on, Benji, try harder in future. Anyway, let's hope you do better in this one, Benji. I think there's at least one you'll get. Right. This is this week's quiz. Don't worry, Pamela Wootton or Pamela Woodson. Neither of you, both of you. Girls, don't panic. This is not Santa Banter. This is the proper quiz. Question number one. Who visited the Pacific island of Kiritimati, Christmas Island, on Christmas Eve 1777 and documented it? Well, up until he got there, it wasn't called Christmas Island, was it? It was just called Kiritimati, and then he called it... Who found Christmas Island? Answer me that. Riddle me this. Question number two. In 1995, Max Bygraves had the biggest UK hit version of which song that has also been hits for Chubby Checker and Bobby Rydell, they did it together, and Bobby Helms. Now, I won't lie to you, kids. I didn't get this one, but I should have, because Bobby Helms, there's only one song that he's really famous for, a Christmas one, I'd say. So you might get that. You might never have heard of Max Bygraves. He was a very famous TV presenter. Well, he was a very famous singer. Then he became a very famous TV presenter. He presented Family Fortunes for a while. Yeah, in a lot of countries, it's called Family Feud. Anyway, question number three. In which European country is El Gordo, which means the fat one, the big Christmas lottery? So they hold a big Christmas lottery and they call it the fat one, or El Gordo. In which European country? Tell me that. L, that's the first bit, L, yeah? That might give it away, yeah? Okay, next one. True or false, this one, kids? Is it true? Is it false? Brussels sprouts in Belgium are actually called Engelssprouten, which means English sprouts. Is that true or is that false? They call them English sprouts or Engelssprouten? You tell me. Question number something. In the novel A Christmas Carol, how much did Scrooge say he would pay the boy if he came back with a poulterer in less than 5 minutes? Yeah? So the boy in the street, Scrooge shouts at him, "Oi, give me that turkey mush. I'll give you this much. Come back in less than 5 minutes, I'll give you that much." How much is that much? Not this much, that much. Next one. What is the name of George Bailey's guardian angel who saves him in the film It's a Wonderful Life? Okay, I want the full name, not just his first name. Okay, I want the second name as well. You can do this. Okay. In 2009, I didn't get this next one. In 2009, which veteran American singer released his 34th studio album? 34 studio albums. His first and so far only Christmas one, called Christmas in the Heart, which he self-produced under the name Jack Frost. Any ideas? Okay, so we're going back, what, 15 years? A veteran, I didn't like the term veteran, because when I found out the answer, I was like, oh, I don't know if that helped me. Couldn't they have found a better word to describe him? He was around a long time ago, but I wouldn't have called him a veteran. I don't know why. I suppose he is. Oh, I don't. Look, let's not talk about that. Let's talk about the answer. Get the answer. I didn't. You can. It's not too late for you. I've failed, but you can do this, especially you, Benji. Right, next one. A rafter is one of the collective nouns for what birds? So apparently these birds, they've got more than one collective noun. Okay, one of those collective nouns is a rafter. Look over there. It's a rafter of what? What is it I'm looking at? Tell me now. Next one. In which novel by C.S. Lewis did he describe Father Christmas as so big and so glad and so real? Okay. And the last question. Oh, up to 10 already, are we? Is that right? Okay. The last question. Tradition has it that London baker and confectioner Tom Smith invented what in 1847 that makes most Christmas dinners go with a bang throughout the UK? You've got to get that one, Benji. You've got to. Okay, that's your 10 questions, kids. Are you prepared for the 10 answers? Question number one. Who discovered Christmas Island on Christmas Eve 1777? That was, of course, Captain James T. Cook. I don't know if he's got the T. It's James Cook. Captain Cook. Question number two. Okay, this is the Max Bygraves one. It was 1959. He releases a single. Other people have released it before him, but his is the most successful version in the UK. But it was also Chubby Checker and Bobby Rydell and Bobby Helms. Well, we all know Bobby Helms sung Jingle Bell, Jingle Bell, Jingle Bell Rock, Jingle Bell Something and Doodly Bum, Fa la la lee da ba da ba da boo, Bum ba dee ba da. Okay, number three. In which European country is El Gordo, or the fat one, the big Christmas lottery? Well, that is Spain. You see, El Gordo. The L should have given it away. I hope it did. Question number whatever. Brussels sprouts in Belgium are called Engelssprieten, or English sprouts. Is that true or false? Well, of course it's false, because in Belgium they call them balls of terror, or something, I don't know. Question number whatever. In A Christmas Carol, how much did Scrooge say he would pay the boy if he came back with a poulterer in less than 5 minutes? You want to know? I'll tell you, kids. Come back in less than 5 minutes and I'll give you half a crown. So originally he says, go and get that turkey, I'll give you a shilling. And he says, get back here in less than 5 minutes, I'll give you half a crown. Half a crown is actually 2.5 shillings. Now, old English money was bizarre. Now, a shilling was 12 pennies and half a shilling was a sixpence. So he's saying, I'll give you, yeah... 2.5 shillings. So it's not only doubled his money, he's got another 50% on top of that. So I say, run quicker, young man. Get that potterer back here. Get you half a crown, mate. There we go. Question number something else. What's the name of George Bailey's guardian angel who saves him in the film It's a Wonderful Life? Well, that was, of course, Clarence Oddbody. Yeah. And you know why he had an odd body? Because he was an angel with no wings. Yeah. Once he got his wings, they called him Clarence Normal Body. Possibly. I don't know. Next one. In 2009, which veteran American singer released his 34th studio album, his first and so far only Christmas one, called Christmas in the Heart, which he self-produced under the name Jack Frost? That was Bob Dylan. Yeah, and I think I remember when that one came out. Yeah, only because I think one of the singles off it was that one, Must Be Santa, Must Be Santa, Must Be Santa, Santa Claus, Must Be Santa. That one, I think that song was off that album. I hope it was. Anyway. Next one. A rafter is one of the collective nouns for what birds? Well, it's Christmas, isn't it? It's got to be turkeys. Of course it is. Oh, number 9 we're up to. In which novel by C.S. Lewis did he describe Father Christmas as so big and so glad and so real? Well, that was, of course, The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe. And the last one, confectioner Tom Smith invented what in 1847 that makes most Christmas dinners go with a bang? That is, of course, Christmas crackers. Thank you, Tom Smith. There you go. That is your 10 questions. Do you want to know what I scored? I got 8. I'm quite happy with that. Yeah. Disappointed about the Bobby Helms one. I know it was Max Bygrave, but the Bobby Helms bit should have given it away. And yeah, Bob Dylan. Didn't know that either. So there you go. Anyway, I hope you did better, particularly Benjamin Pearson. I hope you did better, Benji. Goodness me. 0. Shame on you. Now let's do this.
What the dickens?
So boys and girls, not only did Benji tell me that he did awful in the quiz, well, he also added this in his email. 2 years ago, I asked you for advice on my upcoming Halloween costume as the ghost of Jacob Marley. Your superb knowledge and suggestions were so helpful, making the costume that year a success. I won't lie to you, kids. He sent me some pictures. They were fantastic. He really did look like Jacob Marley. I reckon anyone that was familiar with A Christmas Carol would have seen him and thought, ah, it's Jacob Marley. Yeah. Anyway, I thought I would seek out your expertise on the matter of the Ghost of Christmas Present for this Halloween. What should I make sure to include to avoid people just thinking I am some sort of young Father Christmas / Santa type character? Well, I want to begin by pointing out what he said there, because this was a long time ago, and I think this was before Santa Claus and Father Christmas had completely amalgamated into the same thing. So we are looking more at Father Christmas, or as he was called before his name solidified as Father Christmas. He was also called things like Old Christmas as well, and sometimes you'll see pictures of Santa Claus as Old Christmas. So I'm going to play the bit in the book that describes the Ghost of Christmas Present. Here it comes.
I am the Ghost of Christmas Present, said the spirit. Look upon me. Scrooge reverently did so. It was clothed in one simple, deep green robe or mantle, bordered with white fur. This garment hung so loosely on the figure that its capacious breast was bare, as if disdaining to be warded or concealed by any artifice. Its feet, observable beneath the ample folds of the garment, were also bare, and on its head it wore no other covering than a holly wreath, set here and there with shining icicles. Its dark brown curls were long and free as its genial face, its sparkling eye, its open hand, its cheery voice, its unconstrained demeanour, and its joyful air. Girded round its middle was an antique scabbard, but no sword was in it, and the ancient sheath was eaten up with rust.
Now, before we look at that description, the first thing it does mention in the book is this.
In easy state upon this couch, there sat a jolly giant, glorious to see, who bore a glowing torch, in shape not unlike Plenty's horn, and held it up, high up, to shed its light on Scrooge as he came peeping round the door.
So the first thing I want to talk about is Plenty's horn, or the horn of plenty, or the cornucopia. Now, I'm sure you're all familiar with a cornucopia, especially in the States, where quite often a cornucopia is part of a Thanksgiving display. And the word cornucopia comes from corner, which means horn, and copia, which means abundance. So cornucopia pretty much does mean the horn of plenty or the horn of abundance. Now, there's actually a legend behind this. So the legend goes that Zeus, when he was an infant, was hidden away from his dad, who was a psycho called Cronus, and they hid him in his cave on Mount Ida on the island of Crete. Now, baby Zeus was cared for and protected by a number of divine attendants, and one of those was the goat Amalthea, or the nourishing goddess, who fed him with her milk. And now the future king would like suckle on this goat, and he had unusual abilities and strength, and he's just messing around and he broke off one of her horns. And legend has it that he used his special powers to make this horn produce unending nourishment, as the goat had to him. So there you go, that's the legend of the cornucopia. And that is what the ghost of Christmas present is holding aloft. So that's the first thing you're going to need prop-wise, I believe, Benji, is a cornucopia or a horn. I don't think you need to fill it with food, because it doesn't say it's filled with food. It says it looks like a cornucopia, plenty's horn. And have it glowing, because it talks about how it glows. So that's your first thing. So the next thing we need is a green robe or mantle. If you're not familiar with what a mantle is, it's often known as a royal mantle, and it's a robe, it's just a robe, that's worn by kings, queens, or emperors, and they would wear it for their coronation. Yeah, so that's what you're wearing. You're wearing like a robe, and it's got to have the white fur trim. Don't forget that. Now, I've never seen a Father Christmas or Santa Claus in the UK wearing a green robe. I think that goes from a long time ago. The only ones I've ever seen have always been in red. This guy, he's not Father Christmas. He's like Father Christmas. He ain't Father Christmas. He's the ghost of Christmas present. He wears green. You've also, Benji, got to have a bare chest. And you have bare feet, which isn't going to be fun in November, but that's what it says. So if you want to be authentic, you've got to have a bare chest and bare feet. And this robe's got to be loose. And it says that he's got a capacious chest. It doesn't say if he's got a hairy chest. I have seen some interesting versions where he's got a very hairy chest. But it doesn't say that he's got a hairy chest. The whole idea is that he's got a big heart. And that's why he's got like a large chest. Or at least that's what I read. That's what they're suggesting Dickens was going for. The only other thing really, clothes-wise, or at least as a headpiece, is the crown or wreath that you're going to wear on your head of holly, which is going to be uncomfortable, but you could always get a plastic one. I'm not going to hold that against you, because you've got to add icicles as well, and you're not going to be adding proper icicles, because they're going to melt, aren't they? Well, again, it is nearly November, isn't it? It's the last day of October, so yeah, it's going to be cold, Benji, but I'd stick with plastic icicles if that was me anyway. So that's pretty much the outfit. The only other thing you need is the an antique scabbard or a sheath for a sword, which has got to be all rusted up without a sword in it, don't forget. So yeah, that'd be easy enough to make, wouldn't it? You can make one out of cardboard, I reckon, and then just paint it up to look all rusty. But I know you do a very good job, Benji, so maybe you'll get a real scabbard. I don't know, but that's the other thing you need. That's pretty much the whole outfit. Now, one other thing, it does mention how good the ghost of Christmas present is at changing his size from large in a large hall to small in like a small doorway. I don't know if you're going to be able to do that. I don't know if you've got the Ant-Man skills where you can change your size. You might have those, Benji. I don't know if that's technology you possess. Now, hair-wise, it mentions that he's got long, dark brown curls. So you're going to need like a long wig with curls, but it doesn't mention facial hair. Now, here's the deal. The original illustrations that came in the book when A Christmas Carol was first printed in 1843, those illustrations were by John Leech, and he did put a beard on the ghost of Christmas present. Having said that, I've seen numerous versions where the ghost doesn't have a beard. So that's, I'm going to leave that to you. Personally, I think it would look good with a beard. Don't forget, it's dark brown, so you're not going to look like Santa Claus. You're going to look like the ghost of Christmas present. Now, the other thing that you might want to think about is having ignorance and want, or two very small scrawny children hanging around at your feet underneath your robe. Now, that's something you might consider. Interestingly, in the original version, before it went to print, Dickens did originally have that Scrooge noticed a claw or bony foot underneath the ghost robe. That was much earlier on in the book, and then it mentions them again later. He decided to take that out, But that is a thing that they're always there. It's not just like they turn up at the end. So that's entirely up to you. I don't know how you do that. Maybe use a little Action Man figure or something. I don't think you're going to want to get your kids, two of them, huddled underneath your robe for the whole night. It's not fair on them, is it? They could be out trick-or-treating. Don't do that to your children, Benji. Come on, you're better than that. You're better than that. The only other thing that I want to mention, and I think this is possibly the most important bit, is you've got to have a genial face, sparkling eye, open hand, cheery voice, an unconstrained demeanour, and a joyful air. That's the important bit, because that's a real long description that Dickens puts in there. He brushes over what the ghost's wearing, but that is the most important part of the Ghost of Christmas Present. So there you go, Benji. I hope that description serves you well, and I'd love to see a picture. I'm sure you do a blinding job of it, and yeah, best of luck. Now let's do this. It's the triumphant return of Robert of Baker. Here he comes. Bob, you're looking magnificent.
Thanks, Jack. I really shouldn't use a segment called Smile of Joy to hawk a product. That is, unless the aim of the item in question is to inspire children to nurture, help others, and share goodness. I recently ran across the Santa's Kindness Ornament and Journal by Demdeco. This is an ornament in the shape of a compass that you hang on your tree. It has a QR code that can be scanned starting on December 1st using a smartphone or a tablet. When scanned each day, Santa will appear from the North Pole, counting down the days until Christmas, but also providing a different message each time, asking the children to help spread smiles of joy to others. Included with the ornament is a hardcover journal to record their daily activities. The company reports that 86% of the parents who purchased the ornament in 2023 saw their kids showcase kindness, and over 90% of parents and kids said they enjoyed the experience. If you know of another way to purchase some extra joy, you sell it to Jack, he'll charge it to me, and we'll all spread our cheer and our arms around the world.
What I like about that, or dislike, is it's 90% enjoyed the experience. What about the other 10%? I hated every minute of it. It was awful. I'm really disappointed in the whole affair. Imagine that. It sounds like a blinding idea, doesn't it? Oh, it's brilliant. Yeah, I'm going to look into those, and I'll probably end up getting them for the girls this Christmas. Fantastic one, that one. Good work. I don't mind plugging a product on it if it's going to spread a bit of joy and happiness. I'm more than happy to do that. So, yeah, go and check those out, boys and girls. I'll probably put a link in the show notes so you can just click on it and have a gander. While I'm here, I've got to do the mandatory plugging of Bob's podcast. If you've not been listening to it, then blimmin' listen to it now. Do you know what? This last episode, they covered a film called The December Boys. And this, there's not been many of their films that I've heard of. This is, I think, maybe the third one that I've heard of in the past. And it stars Daniel Radcliffe. And it was like his first big role after he was started being in the Harry Potter films. So, yeah, I'd heard about it, never seen it. Now I'm going to have to go and see it, aren't I? And it's in English, which is nice. So if you've got a problem with subtitles, you'll be fine with this one, won't you, you lucky people? Yeah, check it out. Festive foreign film fans. I love it. You will too. Now let's do this. Are you ready, boys and girls? This one's not awful, okay? It's not awful. Have a listen. I bought myself a funny Christmas jumper, but it was really prone to static electricity. So I took it back to the shop and they exchanged it for another one, free of charge. Yeah, it's not the best. Let's move on.
Humbug.
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 Bah humbug.
It's all humbug, I tell you.
Christmas a humbug, Uncle? Oh, you don't mean that, surely.
Boys and girls, this episode's version of A Christmas Carol is actually 400 versions of A Christmas Carol, and it's called 1200 Ghosts, and you'll find it on YouTube. Now, this was recommended to me by listener Benjamin Hall, and he's recommended a couple of other good versions, so I want to say thanks to him again for that. But this one is nothing short of blinding. Now, I'm going to play the intro to you, and this will explain what we're about to talk about.
Once upon a time, there was a great author who, with a single story, transformed a holiday. Along the way, other artists found inspiration in this story, creating their own versions of the work. Some were good, some were bad, some were complete train wrecks. Recently, an idiot spent a year and a half collecting these versions. The goal? Create a new narrative, using a small portion of each source to tell it. What is the story, you ask? I would guess you watch it every year.
Now, I'm going to cut to the very end of this hour-long clip. I say hour-long, it's 54 minutes. I'm going to cut to the very end because at the end of the clip, just before the credits roll, he has a very fast piece of text fly up the side. And if you pause it to read it, you can, which is what I've done. So I'm going to read out exactly what he's put. Thanks for watching. The inspiration for this edit is hard to explain, but for anyone who slows my dumb gag here down to see what this says, I'm going to try. That's me. I've slowed down this gag. At some point, who the hell knows when, I did notice that there were a ton of adaptations and variants of this story. As a child of the 80s, the two versions I grew up with and watched every year were Mickey's Christmas Carol and Scrooged. But as I got older, I did see parts of the 1935, 1938, 1951 and 1984 versions. At some point, I thought to myself it'd be cool to collect all the different versions and edit them together. But, like most other thoughts I have, departed me fleetingly in favour of food or googling Jennifer Love Hewitt spaghetti dress. I googled Jennifer Love Hewitt spaghetti dress. Nothing interesting turned up. I was really disappointed about that. However, in the early summer of 2015, I was visiting family and over the course of a few days stumbled upon two TV episode versions, Little Miracle being an episode of Quantum Leap and Home for Christmas being an episode of Saved by the Bell. As the second episode was ending, I had renewed interest in the task, specifically in making sure I got all movie and TV versions I could. My original idea was maybe 50 versions, and if I could actually find that many, I'd call it 150 ghosts. I kept searching and purchasing, and to my surprise, I just kept finding new and unique versions, or little references I wanted to showcase. With each new set I found, the title changed. 225 ghosts, 300 ghosts, 600 ghosts. I finally stopped planning for a title, but did decide to call it a day once I reached 400 pieces of content. By the time my scope creep had ended, I had collected movies, TV episodes, books, audiobooks, comics, pornos, erotic fiction, Viewmaster slides, radio programs, and several plays. I see this as a creative exercise first, technical challenge second, and tribute slash commentary third. I hope people agree, or at the very least, enjoy. Please note, this is a total bastard version of the story. You should actively seek out some of the great versions I tried to highlight if you haven't seen them. I must say, having watched every one of these, is no one else upset that Jacob Marley is still condemned to eternal misery at the end of the story? I mean, he's the only effing reason Scrooge has reformed and saved Timey Tin's life. P.S. Sorry, I half-assed that story in my version. 400 versions wasn't enough, to be honest. So there you go. That is the story of this, and he's edited loads of little clips together to tell the story of A Christmas Carol. Now, a lot of it, he mentioned, is things like books or comics, and he's used voiceover artists. He actually credits them in the credits, and it says the voiceover artists were from Fiverr.com, which isn't something I'd heard of, and he's got people to read out bits from books or bits from comics and that sort of thing. Now, I just want to mention some of the clips that I haven't covered yet, ones that really stood out to me. I think he might have mentioned a couple of those in the text I read out, but there's VeggieTales, Star Trek, Doctor Who, Quantum Leap, The $6 Million Man. There's a large number of live readings or slash recordings that they did for the radio with some very famous people in. There's a version with James Earl Jones as Scrooge, Kathleen Turner as Scrooge, F. Murray Abraham, Brian Cox, David Hyde Pierce. So they show clips of all of those versions, which were originally for radio. There's also a number of comics there as well. So you've got Batman, Captain Marvel, Deadpool. There's a clip from an Archie comic, and also the Simpsons comics as well. And there's a number of adverts. Now, I didn't catch all the adverts, but there's NyQuil, Honey Nut Cheerios, Canadian Tires, the Sears catalogue, DynoCharge, which is for charging batteries, McDonald's, and Walker's Crisps, which I will come back to later. Now, the one major problem that I need to talk about is how it's really front-loaded. So this is 54 minutes long, and the first nearly 27 minutes, so half of it, is just the first chapter. So that's everything that happens in Scrooge's office leading into Marley's ghost. So that takes up 27 minutes. Now, chapter 2 is only 7.5 minutes. Chapter 3, which is actually the longest one in the book, is only 4 minutes. Chapter 4 is 5.5 minutes. And the final chapter, the end of it, which is quite a short chapter anyway, that's 4 minutes. So, yeah, that's how he's done it. I want to talk about the stuff that he's included and stuff that he's missed out. Pretty much, because he's got 27 minutes of clips there for the first chapter, he covers nearly everything. The only thing that he did miss out, or the main thing that I noticed he missed out, was the faces in the fireplace. I've seen at least 2, maybe 3 versions that have got the faces in the fireplace. So that's something he could have found, I'm sure. And they were definitely versions that he used, because I counted, and I think I missed a number, but I found definitely 43 versions in there that I'd covered myself. Yeah, so you got the first chapter, that's very well done. Now, for the Ghost of Christmas Past, they do show lots of bits, but they're not necessarily bits from the book, because a number of these versions are like modern day retellings, or they're like episodes of sitcoms, so they're just random bits that are associated more with the show. They don't show the school at all. There's only a very, very short part in Fezziwig's Christmas party. We do see Belle leaving Scrooge, that is covered, but there's no bit where you see Belle in the future, and there's no mention whatsoever of his sister Fan either, which is a shame. Yeah, so that's the Ghost of Christmas Past. Now, when it goes to Ghost of Christmas Present, they only cover the Cratchits, and to be honest, they only really cover Tiny Tim. Like I said, this is the shortest section, it's only 4 minutes long, so they spend some time introducing the different versions of the Ghost of Christmas Present, but they don't spend much time doing anything else. They cover Tiny Tim, but they don't go to Fred's house at all, there's none of that. So that's the Ghost of Christmas Present. The Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come, well, you do see the men in the street, the well-to-do gentlemen talking. There's a couple of clips from old Joe as well in his beadling shop, and then they show the grave. So there's no clip of the Cratchits being sad that Tiny Tim died, and none of the other minor bits that are also in the book. So there was that, a lot missed out there. And then the end of it, well, you do get the boy in the street, and there's a number of clips of him talking to the boy in the street. The sad thing is, there's no Walker. And I'm thinking, oh, it's going to come. He's got to say it. Doesn't say it. All these different versions of the boy in the street, he doesn't say it. But when they show the crisp advert I mentioned earlier, which is Walker's crisp, I think most countries around the world they're called Lay's, but in the UK they're still called Walker's. That clip is him stood at his window talking to the boy in the street about Walker's. So I thought, yeah, you did all right there, almost. Could have had the boy saying Walker. But still, I was happy to see that. And then he does go to see Fred, but we don't see the Cratchits getting anything delivered to their house, and there's no scene the day after when Bob Cratchit goes back to work the day after Christmas Day. So they missed that bit out completely as well. All in, it's not a very faithful retelling. I mean, the first bit is, the first half, the rest isn't. I guess this was a real labour of love, but also there's so much to do. I mean, if he'd been going at the same pace he was going at for 26 minutes for the first chapter, he would have ended up at nearly 2 hours, and that would have taken him all sorts of time to edit and put together. So I think we can be pretty impressed with it, but generally it's lacking at the back end. Now, here's the deal. I say you watch it. I say definitely go and watch it, because you'll enjoy it. It is quite long, but you know, you can chuck it on in the background when you're doing something else. I think you'll like it. Go to YouTube, type in 1200 Ghosts. I did read online that it says, currently Heath Waterman is working on an extended multi-part follow-up, a Christmas Carol encyclopedia covering the whole story. Part 1, covering chapter 1, and half of Stave 2 was released in December of 2020, with the rest planned for Christmas 2021. Well, I've had a look, and he's only done the part 1 of this Christmas encyclopedia. I watched most of it. It's very similar to this 1200 Ghosts. I really do hope he gets back to it, but you know, it's been 4 years nearly since he did that first segment, so we'll see if he ever does. And if he does, then I'm sure I'll update you on it. But at the moment, yeah, all we've got is the part 1 of his next version of it. Anyway, that was this episode's versions, I've said, because there's 400 versions in there, of A Christmas Carol. Definitely go and check it out, because there'll be loads of little bits there you'll recognise, and there'll be loads of other bits you think, wow, I never knew that take on it. And it's also inspired me, because it's given me loads of other versions that I can follow up on and cover in future episodes. So there we go. Now it's time for this. And that's it for this episode, boys and girls. Once again, I'm sorry to say, I don't have a recommendation for you. Yeah, I've just been listening to audiobooks recently, and I'm really enjoying them. What do I listen to? I signed up to Audible. You know, Prime Day, you get 3 months free on Audible. I thought, you know what, I'm doing it. I'm biting the bullet. I'm only going to use it for 3 months. I don't want to pay any money. I'm a cheapskate. But I listened to Michael Richards's autobiography, and I was a big fan of Seinfeld, still am, and Kramer, and it's very interesting indeed. Yeah, it was like 16 hours long. I got like 2 whole working days out of it. I was happy with that. Yeah, anyway, that's not a recommendation. Well, it is, actually. I quite enjoyed that audiobook, but, you know, normally my recommendations are podcasts, but that's something, I suppose. Anyway, that's the end of this episode. I really hope you've enjoyed it. If you want to get in touch, you know what to do. Email me at totalchristmas@gmail.com. You can go on the website. There's a contact form on there, totalchristmaspodcast.com. Or you can go on the Facebook. All you have to do is search Total Christmas Podcast on Facebook and I'll pop up. You can contact me that way. I'd love to hear from you. Yeah, so I'll be back again in 2 weeks' time. In the meantime, you know I love you. Merry, happy Christmas.
You don't look so good, buddy. Are you okay?
I'll be okay. I just need a glass of water.